And welcome back. While a lot of us are more or less preoccupied with money, we also take it pretty much for granted in many ways. Not our next guest, Harley Spiller, the author of Keep the Change, A Collector's Tales of Lucky Pennies, Counterfeit C-Notes, and Other Curious Currency. Clearly the longest book title that we've come across recently, Harley, but it will make you look at money a little bit differently. And Harley Spiller joins us in studio. Great to have you with us.
Thank you very much, Don. A pleasure to be here.
I enjoyed your book, and I thought, you know, what can we learn about money? But there's an awful lot to learn, isn't there?
It's immensely complicated. Nobody's ever going to get to the end of it.
You know, but you're a fan of mangled money. That struck me as somewhat odd. I would thought an aficionado would look for the pristine stuff.
There are a lot of aficionados. One of the biggest numismatists in the world is Eric Newman from St. Louis. He loves brilliant uncirculated. But he also collects torn bills, and he's got a few from Ben Franklin's time, and they didn't have scotch tape, so they would sew them back together. There's a lot to be learned from the mutilation of money, the mangling of it.
Oh, really? Such as?
Well, if you get a coin that's been smoothed, where did it come from? How did it happen? Who did this? Why? There's so many questions to be asked. Whereas if you buy a coin from the mint or a dealer, you pretty much know its history. That's not as much fun to me.
Well, I gather that from reading your book, as I say, which I enjoyed. What is the oldest money that we're aware of?
Well, there's pre-money. People traded blocks of salt. When salt was life, there were no refrigerators. You could preserve food for the winter. People traded cattle. Iron rods were a hot ticket for our forebears.
It, you know, what caught my eye was the fact that you made reference to the Mississippians, the folks that were responsible for Cahokia Mounds over there, and the fact that copper was, if not a currency, something they used sort of like currency, I guess.
Highly prized and ritualistic, and also a show of your status. If you had the repoussé, the hammered copper plates that are in the museums here in Forest Park, you were respected more. Kind of like an elf's shoes have a little curl on the toe. You knew that guy was something special. But interestingly, they were buried with it. So the copper went back in the ground where it came from.
Is there a most valuable piece of currency out there somewhere, that the single most valuable piece of currency?
Whew. There's a $10,000 bill that was issued by the United States, a $100,000 bill issued by the United States. They're not in circulation today. I understand Donald Trump has one of these framed and hanging behind his desk. Mr. Newman's coins are on the block now. He's 104 years old, and they're being auctioned in several sales over going on now. And he may well set records with some of his holdings.
What about America's oldest currency? What was our first currency like?
It was highly counterfeitable. each individual bank. I mean, even going back to the Lenape, to the First Nations, they used wampum and seashells woven into belts and strands, and the Brits got here and they said, oh, there's these backwards folk. We'll just go to Waterford and Wedgwood, and we'll make some seashells and we'll pass those along, and they'll never know. They knew right away, and trade was difficult because the earliest arrivals tried to fake the locals. These were specific seashells. It's not like you can go down to the banks of the Mississippi, find a few mussel shells, and you're rich. They came from specific locations. From deep in the sea. So the groups that found them would say. But they lied, and they covered their tracks. They weren't as deep as they said. One of these fourth-generation guys said, I want to find what Grandpa was talking about, or great-great-grandpa. And he recreated their shell-digging devices and couldn't find them where they had said it would be. It was much closer to shore, much less dangerous, much more available, but they were hush-hush. And today, the U.S. government is hush-hush about a lot of the techniques and ingredients in the money.
That's because of the counterfeiting problem.
Exactly. Exactly. Okay. They tell you a lot. When you go to the federal website, one of them is called moneyworks.com. They are extremely transparent, but not all the way.
How did our currency evolve beyond wampum?
It started green, and it's still green. So in some respects, it hasn't evolved all that much. It's always been a cloth rectangle, at least the banknotes. But today, we have some nice colors in there. The full range, red, orange, yellow, green, blue, indigo, violet, are on the bills from 1 to the 100 today. But it's faint, and it's still cloth. In Mexico, Australia, Sweden, the money is polymer. It's plastic, and it's brightly colored. The French francs before the euro had Le Petit Prince on the money. The Swiss have Giacometti on their bills. We've kept traditional. And Canada's eliminated the penny. We still have the penny. It costs 2 to 3 cents to make a penny. So lose it and save money. No. Don, if you came to work tomorrow and you had a big red afro, people would say, hey, Don, what's going on? Is everything okay? If we drop the penny, we save money, but people are wondering, do they need to save money? So we've kept a lot of the traditions.
Is that the only reason we're keeping the penny? Is for the prestige value, the symbolism?
I'm not sure. Yeah. There's chatter back and forth over the years about eliminating the penny. It definitely costs more. It has been debased. It used to be pure copper. It's now mostly zinc. The copper coating on the penny is 1/2000th of an inch thin. That's hard to figure out, but if you've ever tried to find the tape on the roll and you're digging around for that little end of Scotch tape, Scotch tape's about 1/2000th of an inch.
It's a pretty big deal to change money, isn't it? I'm thinking back to the Susan B. Anthony dollar and a number of other talking now about the $20 bill and taking Andrew Jackson off and putting maybe Harriet Tubman on, that sort of. But it's a big deal to make this change.
It's huge. It's a traditional nation and a change. We're a leader in the world in large part because of our money. There are nations that back their money with gold.
As we did at one time.
We did. And there are nations that back their money with U.S. $100 bills. And there are billions and billions of dollars in national repositories of our money. That's their safeguard. So if we mess with that, it's the world economic system.
And yet again, we have to go back to the problem of counterfeiting. I want to talk a little more detail about that. But just before I do, is our currency or other currencies more easily counterfeitable, if that makes any sense to you?
Who do you think you're talking to, Don? I'm not a faker. I don't know. No,
But you spent a lot of time in the book on counterfeiting.
Thank you. I sure did. And I guess ours are pretty hard to fake, but they're were circulating, maybe still, super notes. These were perfect replicas. They were passing all the bank tests. You know, you go to the bank, you give in some money, they count it, and it goes in a machine, and it riffles through the bills, and it shines ultraviolet lights and runs magnet detectors and verifies it. These fakes were working perfectly. They needed to stop this. It's not the guy on the corner making a few hundreds to buy a new pair of sneakers or a watch for his girlfriend. These are big amounts, and it's nations fighting economic warfare. So the first step in figuring out who's doing this is finding the difference, like Highlights Magazine. What's the difference between these two pictures? So they're looking at the 100 enlarged to the size of a basketball court, and finally, Eureka. On the back of the 100 is Independence Hall. There's a clock tower, and it's 10:20 a.m. Well, the minute hand is extended outside the circle of the clock. On the real U.S. money. On these so-called super notes, the idiot counterfeiter corrected the mistake. And the minute hand was back in the circle. So The Secret Service, who's in charge of anti-counterfeiting, I always thought they were in charge of protecting the president, and they are, but their primary responsibility is anti-counterfeiting, which is more important than one president. They're not surprised to know that a fake is better than the original. Our bills are handmade originally. Of course, they're reproduced by expensive engraving machines in multiple. But the original artwork is drawn by hand. A botanist does the leaves. An architect draws Independence Hall. A portrait artist gets Harriet Tubman's face just right. And that is hard to fake. It's easy to copy something that's drawn with a ruler and a protractor. Not easy to copy a Picasso.
But, you know, a lot of folks, I gather, are able to detect a counterfeit bill by touch as opposed to visually comparing it to the real thing.
That's amazing. My best friend Joe has been a banker for his entire career. He can distinguish the denominations blindfolded. He's handled that much money, and we're very proud of the feel of our money. When you buy a bag of chips, or I should say T-Rav, I know you guys know what that means, and you get four or five singles in change, do you look at each one and stall the line behind you? No, but you subconsciously, you fan them out in your fingers and you feel them. And that texture is very specific. If I was to slip a piece of magazine paper in there, you would be alerted right away by your fingertips.
You indicated earlier that our money is not paper money, it's cloth money.
Yes, it's 75% cotton and 25% linen, the feds will tell you. But they're telling the truth, but not the whole truth. Linen is a type of weave. It's not necessarily a fabric. You can have wool linen, silk linen, cotton linen. The linen in our money is flax.
Flax.
Flax. The same seeds we take to improve the strength of our digestion improves the strength of our money.
What about the durability of our money? How long does it last?
A single has an average of 6 years. We take care of our Benjis, though. Those last about 15 years, if not the rest of your life.
Because they're handled so less frequently.
Less frequently. And whenever I get one, I put it away a little more carefully.
What about bitcoins? You don't mention bitcoins in your book, but this is the new virtual currency that a lot of people seem to be excited about. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, they're virtual. There is no token of the bitcoin. So I don't like them. I have nothing to collect. I do read about them with great interest. They may well take over, but then again, the e-book has not replaced my dictionary at home. I still have physical books. I think money and books are similar in that way. And I think you can carry a lot of credit cards. You can have your Bitcoin or Zeus coin or Peer coin, all these cyber currencies. But I still feel comfortable with a 20 in my pocket.
What kind of a collection do you have? You mentioned your collection.
I have about 11 pounds of mutilated money. It's money you can't count because some of it is shredded. Some of the coins are so mangled it's hard to tell if it's a dime or what. So I weigh it.
And well, all right. How many pounds of coins do you have?
11 pounds.
11 pounds. All right.
Or so.
The part in your book about burning money I found fairly interesting. Who the heck wants to burn money?
Well, a fat cat in the 1950s at the Stork Club might show off by lighting his cigar with a flaming $100 bill. And a social activist might like to complain about closed-door Wall Street practices by burning some money down in front of the stock exchange.
And when they do that, what kind of trouble are they in? Or are they?
They're in a gray area. It is a law that we can burn the United States flag. I can't burn your flag, Don, but if it's my flag, I can burn it. It's not anybody's health. It's a symbol of the nation. It's not the nation itself. That law is written. Our money is not really anything. It's a $100 bill costs 11 cents to manufacture. It's not worth $100, really, the physical content of it. So burning it is against the regulations. You're not allowed to mutilate, to harm money. But those regulations hinge on the word intent. So if you're burning it to mess with the economic system, they will probably come after you. But if you're burning your money as a statement, as an artist, the one artist I've seen do this was issued a ticket by the police for disorderly conduct. And when they approached him burning money, he said, "Oh, you would like me to stop? I'll stop." And I thought, how strange. I thought he would be vehement about his cause. But he'd been schooled by lawyers, and he did exactly as they said. They wrote him a disorderly conduct ticket. Of course, he was documenting this with video cameras. And when he got to court, they said this guy was neither disorderly nor showing bad conduct, and he was excused.
Well, what sort of art was he proclaiming by doing this?
This is socially conscious art. This is a modern way. It's art without a physical product. He was trying to change the world for the better. He doesn't like what happens. Look, on Wall Street, they can blow billions of dollars in one move, and it disappears. But who did that and why? Why can't I burn a couple hundred bucks as my statement?
What about actual art, graffiti, if you will, on bills? We've all seen bills that have had various colors on them or drawings or what have you.
Yes. I rest my case on Mr. John W. Snow, former Secretary of the Treasury. My sister Laura met Mr. Snow at an event and she said, "Oh, my brother's a fancier of U.S. money. May I please have your autograph?" And he said, "Do you have a dollar?" And my sister took offense. You're charging for your autograph, sir? He said, "No, my signature is engraved on the bill. I thought I might sign it in pen and ink right above that signature." So he did that. If it were really a bad crime, the Secretary of the Treasury would not write on the money. So again, it hinges on intent. His intent was to provide a souvenir for a fan.
When I was a kid, I drilled a hole through a 50-cent piece, and I still have it. And talk about a coin that is now smooth. I assume the statute of limitations has run out on that, or did I commit a crime?
What was your intent?
To drill a hole through the coin and use it on my keychain.
You're excused. You may go home and not much penance. You know, Abe Lincoln's funeral train went back to Illinois, it moved very slowly down the tracks. And before the Lincoln sent, people would place their pennies on the track and the train would run over them. And they would keep that as a souvenir of having witnessed Lincoln's funeral procession. I wish, to me, that's a highly coveted item. I would love to have one of those.
But, of course, you could never prove that that's exactly what flattened it out or did whatever it did to it.
You couldn't, but if somebody had that from their great-grandpappy, it might come in a case with a ribbon or a little old-fashioned note, and I would be a sucker for that. So if you're listening, St. Louisans, go to inspectorcollector.com and I'll buy it from you.
We'll put a link on our website. Who was on the penny before Lincoln?
A Native American. But Lincoln was the first real person on the U.S. money. Before that, it was Lady Liberty or these figures that didn't have a real basis.
Well, patriotic stuff,
yes.
Probably. Now, I know you brought some things with you that we obviously can't show on radio, but we're showing them on our website. What sort of things will people find when they go to stlpublicradio.org?
Pennies that are corroded and green. And these are the kind of things that you might be offered in change at Schnucks and say, "No thanks, can I get a clean one?" And they'll end up in the corner of the register. But I ask for them. I like them. If we saw the Statue of Liberty the way she first came over from France, shiny and new, it would be disappointing. She's got a beautiful green patina, and that's a thing of the ages. It comes only with time, and I like that. I wish I could afford ancient Roman coins. I can't, but my beat-up Lincoln cents are a good close second.
All right. Well, folks can go to the website, stlpublicradio.org, and get a look at some of your collection. Harvey Spiller, thank you so much for being with us. Congratulations on the book. And again, I'll give that long title, Keep the Change, A Collector's Tales of Lucky Pennies, Counterfeit Sinos, and Other Curious Currencies. It's a fun read and an awful lot to learn from reading your book.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Enjoy your time in St. Louis.
I love St. Louis.
That's it for us today. Tomorrow on St. Louis On the Air, we'll talk about the gender gap in entrepreneurship in the region and a program that provides funds to train women-owned business people. Then we'll take a look at efforts to build a more diverse innovation community. Archived versions of past St. Louis On the Air programs available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org/stlonair. The program is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you for listening. I'm Don Marsh.